Blue Wire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Rebuild. I'm Henry Ettinger, joined by Jordan Klimack. And Jordan, since we last talked, a lot of things have happened with the Browns, but I think the place to start is the Browns got a victory. They got a big victory on Thursday night against the Broncos.
Yeah, it's still kind of like, so we had victory Friday, so it's still kind of like technically victory Monday, and you know, that's just the glory of winning on a Thursday night game. So I'm claiming victory Friday and victory Monday. We get them both, Henry. That's how it works.
I'll take it. I
of course.
It doesn't have quite the same feeling as winning on a Sunday, but frankly, the Sunday games are awful. Of course, it's the first time I had a chance to, you know, really watch the whole league. You know, no Browns game to focus on, and then the games were absolutely dreadful, and I found myself like making runs to Walgreens and cooking soup rather than actually watching football, which is pretty unusual for me. But that was just
Hold on, what kind of soup? Come on, you gotta tell everyone what kind of soup you were making now.
I made a chicken gnocchi soup. Which was okay. A good time. It was terrible weather here in Chicago, too. It rained pretty much.
Oh, Henry, it's been raining for 48 hours here. I don't think it stopped, so.
Yeah, it's the same deal in Chicago. So, yeah, pretty awful. But, I'm still riding a little bit of a high off the Browns victory. There are some other reasons to be less optimistic about the Browns, mostly because it seems like the Bengals have launched themselves into contention as well. But, Jordan, let's talk about that Browns game because – the Browns 17-14 got the job done over the Broncos on Thursday night. It was not a pretty game, but the team did come out with a win. So what were your thoughts on the Case Keenum-led Browns at beating the Broncos?
So I thought, like, obviously it's kind of cliche to say, right, you know, the whole – every time you win a game, like, hey, that was a team win. But, I really do feel like this was a team win. Henry, we talked about, like, earlier in the year, there hasn't really been that game where the Browns put it together in all three phases. I think this was probably the closest to doing that this year. I know they only scored 17 points, but when they needed points, they got them. They got ahead early, which is exactly what they needed to do. I thought the defense stepped up and made some plays when they needed to as well. Then the special teams, Jamie Gillen out of nowhere, you know, the Undertaker meme with his career there, all of a sudden just, you know, the Browns brought in some kickers for competition and it lit a fire under Jamie Gillen apparently. And he had a great game. He had a 65-yard punt. So yeah, it was just a lot of good things going on. And like you said, it wasn't a pretty win, but it was a win that you needed, especially with all the injuries going on, Henry, and guys like Dearness Johnson stepping up. Like, you love to see it. So happy to get a win. Wasn't pretty, but of course we'll take it.
The Dearness Johnson story was also my favorite part of the night to highlight. It was really cool to see all of that happen. And yeah, for me, I came on and said after the game, I really thought this was an organizational win, which is somewhat along the same lines as what you were talking about. But I think the reason I phrased it as that, as far as the organizational infrastructure, is this was a lot of Andrew Berry taking a victory lap a little bit in terms of how well this roster is built. Like, you had Dearness Johnson making a huge impact. You had, you know, Blake Hance had a pretty good game. A lot of these other reserves that he had kind of built out through the depth of this team really, I thought, was what carried the day. And then also, I think coaching. I think the Browns, you know, for as much, again, as I've defended Kevin Stefanski, I don't think he's deserved some of the criticism he's gotten. But this game in particular, I thought was a masterclass by him as far as what he got out of the offense, how he had the team ready to play on a Thursday night. Because, I mean, how many times do we watch these Thursday night games, even with the very best teams, and they come out looking totally unprepared? The Browns had no idea who was going to be in the lineup. Donovan Peoples-Jones goes out right before the game, and they come out and walk down the field and score a touchdown on the opening drive. And they come out and give up 0 points in the first half. So to me, this was a game where the front office, you know, was on full display in terms of the roster they built. Kevin Stefanski did great work with that roster. And then some of the players clearly stepped up as well, both from an on the field perspective. And I thought from a leadership perspective in terms of the guys dealing with the adversity. I feel like there are some Browns teams that would have responded to the criticism they faced differently than this Browns team did. I thought Myles Garrett, you know, had a great game and also stepped up as a leader. I thought John Johnson had a nice, you know, bounce back game as a veteran. So that stuff I thought was also nice to see.
Yeah, I tweeted out during the game. Stefanski was in his bag when it comes to his play calling. I mean, like the play sequencing, just the way they came out on that opening drive, you just knew like, all right, like that opening drive of the game, Henry, that might have been the Browns' best drive of the year, other than maybe the opening drive in Kansas City in terms of just, like I said, the play sequencing, everything Stefanski was doing. Like it was incredible to see, and you hit on all the points. Another guy that just deserves a lot of credit too is Bill Callahan. I think he gets a ton of credit for, I think that this was the best game for the Browns' offensive line this entire year. I thought Jedrick Wills came back in and played his best game of the year. Without question, he was kind of back to looking like himself. Then you mentioned Blake Hantz. You know, shout out to Blake Hantz, man. He needs the love because he stepped in and he's played a major role. He was playing left tackle. He's playing right tackle. I liked him at right tackle. He's alive, you know, much to the chagrin of Von Miller. Like he said, he was going to kill him. I think now Blake Hantz is very much alive. So, yeah, I thought the offensive line had a great game as well. And then obviously, you saw D'Ernest Johnson benefit from the play of the offensive line. But the three guys in particular on that line was Hantz, Wills, and then I got to give it up for Wyatt Teller as well. I feel like it seemed like the Browns were running behind him every single time they ran the ball on Thursday night. So the offensive line was just incredible, and I think probably the biggest reason they won that football game.
Yeah, Jordan, I think that's a great point about the offensive line. You saw the first drive, they just ran the ball. And the offensive line just pushed the Broncos off the ball play after play after play. And you can scheme, you know, to have one weak tackle where you address those weaknesses again, because Blake Hantz is a guard. I mean, that's really the ultimate issue here. And he played okay, but like you can scheme when you have one worry at tackle, but it's tough with two. And you mentioned the return of Jed Wills. I don't know if he was 100% back. He still didn't practice really leading up to the game, but you saw the impact that he had being back there and at least being somewhat more like himself for sure. And so if the Browns going forward can get Jack Conklin back and at least restore that offensive line, I think that would be key, because although they won the game and it is, you know, it was a huge win and great for the most part, considering how much they battled their injuries and all of that, I do think Case Keenum looked pretty limited out there, Jordan. Like, I don't think we can expect a whole lot out of him going forward. I didn't think the processing was great from him. I think you saw some limitations in terms of his arm strength pushing the ball down the field. So the Browns are going to have to continue to run the ball in worth the short and intermediate areas if he's going to be the quarterback, you know, for the Steelers game and beyond potentially.
Yeah, that was, you mentioned, I mean, in case he played fine. And I think he's one of those guys, Henry, that he's like a plug and play guy. You put him in, he's not going to make any like crucial mistakes. He's not going to do too much to win you the game necessarily. But and that was evident in the way that he was underthrowing a lot of the deep balls. The arm strength, I think, was the biggest difference, obviously, that you see from Baker and Case Keenum, and just more evident that like Baker is the guy going forward. And if he can play, he needs to be that guy. I think, look, the fact of the matter is you scored 17 points with Case Keenum. If you go further down the season, Henry, I mean, the game against like the Bengals, you're not going to be able to win with scoring 17 points. You might not be able to beat the Steelers scoring 17 points. So you're going to need to score more points because, you're not going to be playing that Broncos team every week. So, yeah, that was without question to me the biggest difference, though, was the arm strength. There was a he missed Odell on a touchdown that I think that, you know, a better throw gets to him there. And then another deep ball to Schwartz, where Schwartz had the guy beat and then kind of had to come back and save the pass from being intercepted. So that was definitely the biggest difference, Henry, the arm strength and definitely the accuracy as well.
Yeah, he's exactly what you want a good backup to be is, you know, he got plugged in against an average team and he was able to win a game against them. How long he could sustain that, I don't know. You know, if he could beat better teams than that Broncos level of team, he would obviously still be a starter in the league, right? So you can only expect so much out of your backup, but basically the Browns have paid Case Keenum for that game, is to be able to come in, not make mistakes, make the throws you're supposed to make, and not do anything to screw it up with the rest of the roster around him. And the rest of the roster around him did their jobs. I thought, you know, everybody from the offensive line, but then also the defensive perspective as well. I don't think I necessarily think the defensive problems are solved But against a limited Broncos team, they gave up two first downs in the entire first half and only 14 points, which in the modern NFL is about all you can expect, even against a limited offense.
Exactly. And I remember, you know, reading on Twitter all week, you know, people calling in the show talking about like, well, if you're Baker, you don't want to let them see, you don't want to let the Browns see, you don't want to see, let the fans, you don't want the rest of the NFL to see Case Keenum as your backup, because then that will, you know, kind of, in the interesting situation that Baker has going on with his contract, that all of a sudden you look at that like, well, maybe he's not the guy, because you can kind of get the same production Case Keenum. And look, if that was your opinion, if you watched Thursday night's game and you're walking away from that saying like, look, you can plug in Case Keenum and still get the same that you would from Baker, like, please, I would love to pick your brain and figure out how you came to that conclusion, because I think it was evident, if anything, it went in the other direction in Baker's favor in terms of saying, look, you actually are missing a lot with you not out there, rather than Case Keenum.
Yeah, I don't think Case Keenum, hopefully, I think at least, would be the solution if the Browns went in another direction. But that is part of the challenge in general, Jordan. And I think that's a good transition into the Baker Mayfield discussion, because there's been some interesting reporting, from ESPN's Dan Graziano about Baker Mayfield in the last couple of days about how essentially the Browns think they can win with him. They still would be willing to offer him a contract that would pay him in the mid to high $30 million a year range and kind of make him, you know, roughly the fifth, you know, highest paid quarterback in the NFL. So do you think, you know, Keenum's performance played into that, number one? And then what did you think about that reporting from Dan Graziano?
Well, I definitely thought it was interesting and kind of surprised me, to be honest with you, because if anything, you would think that this time would hurt, Baker not being able to play would hurt his chances at getting the contract that he wanted and would kind of work in the favor of the Browns. Because at that point, it's like, if he hadn't got his contract to this point, you would think, okay, there's still something that the front office needs to see, that he still needs to prove, you know, those 17 data points, which are the games this year. And the less you play of them, the more, you know, the team doesn't have to go off of. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, like I that's why I was surprised by it, because I expected to see, you know, Baker not get a contract offer this season after we didn't get it in the off season. And then for him to be out right now and us being able to not see more of Baker in this system, it's kind of odd timing.
Yeah. My guess in this, again, pure speculation, not any reporting, is the Browns probably made an offer somewhere along the lines of this in the offseason, and Baker Mayfield said no. And as I said in the offseason, why I didn't think a contract extension would get done is, if you're Baker, basically the way the quarterback market has gone is the next man up gets the most money. And so why would you take that when Josh Allen just got $43 million, when Lamar Jackson's going to get more than $43 million a year annually? And so to me, my guess, my read on the situation is the Browns said, hey, this was kind of some reporting that this is still on the table. And I think really what's changed here is, you know, ahead of the season, Baker Mayfield was probably thinking, you know, I've got a great team, I've got great weapons, this season's going to go well, and then they're going to be forced to pay me that much money. Whereas now, I think both the leverage has changed a little bit, where this injury means that Baker Mayfield might be more willing to entertain a contract in this range. And I also think the franchise tag, it comes into play here too. So maybe the Browns are saying, hey, we're still willing to go long-term, not the franchise tag, but at our price. Again, total speculation, but those would be the two things I would say that I read into this.
So it sounds to me like you think that this may have came from somewhere in the Browns front office of them putting it out like, hey, like, we offered this and you turned it down. And exactly. Well, so if that's the case, so do you think that there's sort of this like cat and mouse game going on between Baker Mayfield and media right now? Because I can't say for certain, but I don't think that the Browns would have been and probably were too pleased with the Jay Glazer report last week, that all of a sudden comes out, drops 15 minutes before the game, that Baker's way more injured than we thought. And like, you got to think from the Browns' perspective, they wouldn't want to get out. And it was a direct quote from Baker Mayfield. So like, did that get out? And then all of a sudden the Browns like, well, we can drop this as well. Like, yeah, I don't know. It kind of sounds like that could be the case right now. A little cat and mouse going on.
Maybe. And I don't know how much one has to do with another. They certainly could be related. I also just don't know what conversations are going on behind the scenes right now. But like we talked about, I mean, something that could be at play here is, you know, a labrum surgery, you're looking at 4 to 6 months. And so if that happens in the off season, that puts next season in jeopardy for Baker Mayfield as far as the beginning of the season. If he gets it done now, that of course puts this season in jeopardy, but would mean he's around for next season. So I think that's the dynamic too that comes into play here, is the timing of all of this stuff. Yes, there is more than 6 months of time, you know, between when the Browns are likely going to be out, though, of course, if they made the Super Bowl, there wouldn't be 6 months of time. But if they, you know, if they are able to, you know, if they are eliminated by that point, Baker could get the surgery and be back in time. But otherwise, you know, that there is some timing issues here. I think that's a challenge in what might be playing into this as well.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing. But I think that at the end of the day, though, to see, because the number that came out on that was it 30 to 33 million or somewhere in that range?
He said mid to high 30s, which to me kind of indicates 33 to like 38, which, you know, Russell Wilson's the fifth highest paid quarterback at 35 million a year right now. You know, you've got Mahomes at 45, Allen at 43, Dak at 40, Deshaun Watson at 39, Russell Wilson at 35. You know, factor in Lamar Jackson will almost certainly be added to that in the offseason, you know, right around that Josh Allen range would be my guess. So to me, that's what they're saying, is like Baker Mayfield would be right around the fifth highest paid quarterback, as opposed to, you know, the second highest behind Mahomes.
Which, like, I got to say, like, through all of this, and like, we can speculate about where it came from, this, that, and the other. But if that's the case, if it's somewhere in that range of 30 to 35, I'm totally on board with that. Like, I thought it would be coming at a higher price tag. I thought we would be talking closer to the 40. I think we've done podcasts in the past. Obviously, Baker's play this year hasn't probably exactly warranted that 40 million. So if you get him somewhere in the low to mid 30s, Henry, it's pretty attractive moving forward.
Again, I think, you know, the fundamental challenge for the Browns and for all teams in this situation is you can be unhappy with Baker Mayfield, but what's your plan B? You know, because you have to have somebody at quarterback, right? And so you could franchise tag him. I think the franchise tag is projected at roughly 28 and a half million for next year right now. But that's a short-term solution, because the year after that, it would be in the mid 30s. And then the year after that, it would be astronomical. You basically can only franchise tag somebody for 2 years. And every quarterback that's played the franchise tag game has won. Kirk Cousins did it. Dak Prescott has did it. Somebody has paid them. And in the case of Kirk Cousins, I applaud the Washington football team for saying, hey, he's not the guy, like, we'll let him go. But you see what dilemma that puts you in, because good quarterbacks don't hit the free agent market. You can't get one that way. If you're a team like the Washington football team and the Browns are in a similar situation, the rest of your roster is going to be too good to get you a high draft pick either. So you're left with what options that would be better than Baker Mayfield. You're picking the free agent market for kind of lower mid-tier quarterbacks. I mean, where you're hoping for a trade. And other than that, there's really no other options. So you play this whole game, and at the end of it, you realize Baker Mayfield's still the best option at the end of it. And so that's why teams always sign their franchise quarterbacks, even if they're not sold on the Jared Goffs, the Carson Wentzes. You really don't have a choice.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is kind of like, I don't think that either of us or really anyone really out there has ever thought that, like, this would get to a point where we get down to a road where it's like franchise tag next year and then you move on. Like, I don't think anyone really was expecting that. I think it was kind of expecting this contract situation to get solved at some point. And it was kind of just when it was going to happen and what the dollar figure was going to be. I don't know. Do you expect there to be some sort of deal made now after hearing this? Or do you think, like you said earlier, because Baker might've said no to that, does he come back and realize, like, hey, if I'm compromising my situation, maybe I have to consider this?
I think nothing happens until the offseason. I'd be surprised if anything happens until the offseason. I just think this was some anchoring from the Browns front office.
Interesting timing.
Yeah. And that's why I said that was my speculation, is that it could have something to do with his current injury, because otherwise I don't really know why this would be coming out during the actual season itself.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Jordan, let's transition to, I think, you know, the mini bye, which is what I like to call that, you know, these 10 days after Thursday night, is a nice little period. It's not quite the bye week, but because the Browns bye week is so late this year, I like to do this earlier. It's just to do a mini, you know, reset in terms of taking a bigger picture look at what's happened so far this season. So Browns are 4-3. They sit, you know, really third in their division at this point, because the Steelers 3-3. As far as the season has gone so far, what has differed, you know, from your expectations through the first seven games? What did you think would be different that hasn't materialized so far?
I think that's pretty easy for me, and it's just the secondary play. At times this year, I think the defensive line has gotten the job done very often. I think the players on that defensive line have kind of gotten frustrated to the point where it's like, hey, we're getting our job done. We're doing our end. The secondary isn't holding up their end of the bargain. I thought that, you know, coming into this year, it's been a weird, weird year for Denzel Ward. I think probably his worst year of his career so far. I mean, just kind of being frank about it. And then of course he gets injured again. So it's been a weird season for him. It's kind of weird to say this too, because I think Greg Newsome has been one of like the bright spots. He had a great game on Thursday night when Ward went down. He made a couple plays, but overall in general too, like the safety play, Ronnie Harrison coming in and out of every game, John Johnson, kind of the lack of communication going on at sometimes, and the busted coverage, Troy Hill has been hit or miss. I just really expected that. I thought that we upgraded a lot in those secondary positions, and yeah, it's been better than last year, but hasn't been quite as good as I expected it to be. And I think that the players would say so themselves. So I think to me easily, this could be the secondary, because if you fix a lot of those issues in the secondary, all of a sudden it's like, okay, well maybe you beat the Chargers because you don't have those two blown coverages. There's just a lot of different scenarios that I think could have played out differently this year if the secondary had been on top of their game.
Well, it's funny because I feel the same way as you were. I was making a list and I was like, okay, what went worse than expected? And I wrote down the secondary was the first thing. Denzel Ward, John Johnson, Ronnie Harrison. And then I was writing down what's better than expected. And I wrote down the rookie contributors and Greedy Williams / Grant Delpit, two guys who didn't play last season. And I was like, well, that's ironic because Greg Newsome is the first round pick. And I was like, and Greedy Williams is also a secondary player and Grant Delpit is a secondary player. But you're right. I do think if you take it in the whole, the guys that you would expect to be elite haven't been elite. Now it hasn't been a total disaster because some of these other guys have stepped up, but you know, Greg Newsom's been injured. He hasn't played the whole time. Greedy Williams is more so a reserve. So the impact of those guys might not be as high, but I agree with you 100% that the secondary is number one for me. And then I wrote number two being Baker Mayfield. And we've talked about this ad nauseum, of course, in terms of the injury and everything else. But I thought the second half of last season was real, that he was going to build upon that. And, you know, how much of it's the injury, how much of it's not, obviously we'll never know. But at this point, if you had asked me what Baker Mayfield's level of play would have been like through seven games, I would have, of course, expected it to be much higher than what we've seen.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I kind of tie Baker in with Odell. I kind of put them like, you know, 2A and 2B, basically. Just because, like you said, didn't expect, especially after how well the season started for Baker, from an accuracy and rating standpoint. I mean, it was off the charts. It's some of the best we've seen from him. And he kind of really carried over from how well he ended his last season. And then, like you said, is it the injury or is there something else there? Probably a combination of both, but the fact of the matter is Baker hasn't played as well as I thought. And then the whole Odell thing, it's like, I don't understand it because, you know, those first couple of weeks, Henry, you go, okay, he's running wide ass open. We can't figure out a way to get him the ball. Baker can't get him the ball. And then he keeps having these drops. He's falling down on routes. And then he's getting hurt. Like every time he plays, it's really weird. And it's such a weird situation. And it just kind of seems like at this point, Henry, the whole Odell and Cleveland thing isn't going to work out for whatever reason. Like there should be a 30-for-30 made on this someday of just like how this never materialized in Cleveland. I just don't get it. So to me, those two things are just, they go hand in hand, obviously with quarterback and wide receiver, but other than the secondary, it's definitely been that.
on one hand, the OBJ thing hasn't been as good as I would like it to be, especially with how it's played out in terms of watching the tape and seeing kind of the errors between Baker and OBJ, because I don't really think that was present in the same way when they had previously been on the field together. I feel like this situation has been a departure from previous seasons in terms of just how off they've been, just how out of sync they've been. On the other hand, I always thought this was going to be Odell Beckham Jr.'s last season in Cleveland. And I think it's going to be Odell Beckham Jr.'s last season in Cleveland still. So that part hasn't changed from a macro sense, but from a micro sense, it hasn't worked out from the way I expected. And then Jordan, I had one other thing written down, which was the Browns schedule. The Browns came into the year with the third easiest projected schedule. And I was thinking about what I thought the record would be after seven games. And I was like, well, I thought they were going to be 5-2. And I said they were going to lose either one of the Chargers or the Vikings game, which they did. Both games I predicted in the moment for the Browns to win, but in very close fashion. And they ended up dropping one of those. I thought they would lose the Chiefs game. And then the one thing I thought would be different was the Cardinals game. Well, it turns out the Cardinals are still undefeated, the only NFL's last undefeated team. It turns out that the Ravens don't seem to have taken a step back year over year, despite all of the injuries they've suffered. It turns out that the Bengals are way better than we've expected. Aaron Rodgers still on the Packers, which was up in the air at the beginning of the season. Raiders on the schedule, looking mighty good. So everybody thought this Browns schedule was going to be like pretty, pretty soft coming into the year. And I feel like that's almost part of the reason as I look forward, I'm more concerned about this team going forward is just there are some other really good teams around them that I did not expect to be as good as they are.
Yeah, and obviously the huge one is the Bengals. Coming in this year, I feel like everyone and their brother kind of had the Browns circled for two wins against the Bengals this year. And it's looking like he might split that, or who knows how that's going to go. But the Bengals are good. They're legit. And it's hilarious that we just can't catch a break in the AFC North ever. It's just always going to be this crazy division because coming into the year, you would have thought, all right, Browns and Ravens are just going to duke it out. Those two back-to-back games against the Ravens that the Browns have coming up here in a handful of weeks, like that's going to decide the division. Then all of a sudden you sprinkle Cincinnati into the mix. Look, there were three playoff teams from the AFC North last year. There could be three playoff teams from the AFC North again this year. It's just insane. But yeah, like you said, other teams like the Raiders as well, the Packers. Yeah, like the schedule definitely is a lot harder than you thought it would be. And these things always go, isn't it? Like you look at the offseason, the schedule in the offseason, like, oh, this looks good. You start circling these wins, and then like 3 weeks in, it's just none of that ever mattered.
Injuries, the spots, all that kind of stuff. You can try to predict it, but you just ultimately you cannot. That being said, Jordan, I wanted to ask the reverse of the question. What has gone as expected, in this season so far? Because it feels like it's been a very up and down season for the Browns. But what do you think has gone as you thought it would, from the start of the season?
I would say the offensive line, mixed with the run game, I would say. Definitely the run game in particular, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. I mean, and you can even add Dearness Johnson to the mix as well. But those two guys, when they're on the field, and then again, you've sprinkled Dearness in there, they're produced. They've produced all year. The Browns have been able to keep their identity offensively because of the production that they've gotten from all those guys. So that's gone exactly how I've expected it to go, Henry. I guess the other thing I would say too is, I guess his account to just is too easy to just take Myles Garrett as like, I mean, like every year you can expect him at this point to come in and just dominate. And like, that's kind of what I've had. Like this year, we're talking about all offseason. He's going to be competing for defensive player of the year if he's able to stay out there. He's been able to stay out there so far. And sure enough, he's right in the thick of things for a defensive player of the year. So I don't know if that's taken like a too easy of a route, but Myles Garrett, I think he has to be in there.
When you're held to that high of a standard, it's hard because he almost can't be better than expected when it's like, hey, you expect him. If the expectation is to be in the defensive player of the year conversation, it's like you can't go above and beyond that really at that point. But guess what? He's leading the league in sacks and is in the defensive player of the year conversation. So, no, I don't think that's too easy because that is not guaranteed every year. How many years have we seen great defensive players that have struggled for one reason or another? And I don't think he has at all. And you stole mine as far as the running game. But the other thing I would just say is I have hammered the table for Kevin Stefanski, and I'm going to keep doing that. I think Kevin Stefanski is an awesome coach, and I think we've seen that again this year. I think the preparation Thursday night, I think we saw, you know, how they came out against the Chiefs. For the most part, again, this team hasn't, you know, had any games where I was like, okay, this is just like on the coach, total disaster. Like, there are so many teams that I was watching on Sunday, and this is really where I think it came from, where I was just like, wow, this is a coaching debacle. Like the Bears, coaching debacle, Lions, coaching debacle, Eagles, coaching debacle. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, yeah, I am so thankful that the Browns have Kevin Stefanski, because yes, you can nitpick certain situations, the fourth downs, all of that stuff. But the Browns actually have a good coach. And you watch so many of these teams that are losing games they shouldn't lose just because they're totally outcoached. That's the other thing I had written down is, hey, this is exactly as I thought it was going to be. And I am just as confident as ever that he's the guy.
So are we doing a better than expected? Is that next? Am I jumping the gun?
Sure, sure. Yeah. What's been better than expected?
For me, this one's a layup, not even close. It's Chase McLaughlin. I think that has to be, you know what I mean? Cause like coming in this year is like, God, who's our gonna kicker gonna be? Like, there's gonna be like, if this team has the aspirations that they do of getting to a Super Bowl, playing in big games, making a playoff run, one of those games is going to come down to an extra point, a field goal, or at some point, one of these big games is going to come down to a kick. And Chase McLaughlin has been money this year from 50 plus. Henry, he had a 52 yarder heading into the dog pound on that Thursday night game. That's unheard of. And to go where we came from with Cody Parkey to now having a guy you can trust, probably the guy I'd say Chase McLaughlin I trust more at this point, any guy since Phil Dawson. I mean, we've been looking for someone for that long. I think he's been the best Browns kicker since then. So to me, that's the easy one that's been better than expected.
It was funny. I laughed because I hadn't thought of that as an answer, but I think that's a great answer, frankly, is I was worried about the kicking game ahead of the season. And this is how you know McLaughlin's done a great job. I don't even think about it as being a concern anymore. And so that's why it didn't even cross my mind. It's exactly. You pencil him in. He's good. I wrote down two things. Number one, the rookie class. I brought it up earlier. Even if you expect draft picks to be good long-term, usually it's tough for these guys to contribute to winning football right away. And we see this all the time in basketball for sure, but even football, you know, some of these first-round guys, I mean, it's just an adjustment going to the NFL. It's not always that easy, especially, you know, as some of the skill position guys take a while. Some of the line guys, I mean, we've seen that all across up and down the NFL this year, but JOK's looked fantastic. Greg Newsom's looked fantastic. I mean, a lot of times these guys miss. How many, you know, even of the great teams, how many of their draft picks don't contribute at all? And I think, you know, you see that from organizations all the time, but all of the Browns draft picks are contributing at the top. And then they've gotten some unlikely draft picks to contribute, like Demetri Felton, like Malik McDowell as an undrafted free agent. So to me, that was number one. And then the second thing I had written down was Jadeveon Clowney. I would, you know, was critical of him in week
that's
two.
A good one.
Other than that, I was happy with the Clowney signing, but he's been really, really, really good so far this season in a way that I was not sure he still had left in him. I mean, the last couple of years for Jadeveon Clowney, he's shown flashes of this, but he's had a remarkably good seven games. Six that he's played. And so he's really, and this defensive line is dominant in part because other teams can't just key in on Myles Garrett. And that's Clowney, that's the guys in the middle. But in general, this defensive line as a unit has been fantastic.
Yeah, and I think the one guy, too, that could easily have made this list on that defensive line is Malik McDowell. I mean, there's been points this year where he's been dominant in football games. He's been a huge piece of that defensive line and the success that they've had all year, especially in Henry. The Browns, for as many defensive flaws as they have, they've been one of the top three teams against the run all year long. And that starts with those defensive tackles up there. I'm throwing Malik Jackson as well, a guy I don't think gets enough credit for how good he's been this year as well. But you said JOK, and I think that he's the one guy because I thought he was going to be good. I thought he had the chance to be great. I didn't think he was going to be as – like watching the tape on him is just like fascinating to me how fast he is. He's able – the angles he's able to take to the ball, how fast he is getting to the ball. There's just some – obviously he's on IR right now, but – he was just so much better and so much he adapted the NFL game so much quicker than I thought he was going to. And that's been a huge plus as well. So it's interesting that we say all these things on the defense that still is like the one unit that's holding this team back. It's ironic. I know we talked about it earlier, but it's just kind of hilarious how that works.
The defense has been a mystery all year because some guys have stepped up in ways you didn't think, but because some of the guys you penciled in haven't been as good as you would have thought, then overall, I think it's worked out to be a bit of a disappointment. And Jordan, I want to end the podcast just quickly, you know, after seven games, you know, again, with the mini buy reset here, because the Browns buy so late, I want to ask you this now. Would you revise your season prediction? If so, what two? And do you think the Browns at this point, how confident are you they're still going to make the playoffs? You had them making the playoffs at the beginning of the year, I'm almost certain.
Yeah, I had them making the playoffs. I actually had them at 12-5 on the year. So that's probably not going to happen. I understand it's still technically obtainable, but that's probably not going to happen. I think I'd go somewhere around the 10-7 range for the Browns record at when it's all said and done this year. I think they absolutely can and probably still will make the playoffs. They got to take care of business in this next stretch of games. That's really what it's going to come down to. When you have this game against the Steelers, the Bengals, the Lions, the Patriots, you got to win those games leading into those Baltimore games. So if they're able to take care of business in those games, they should make the playoffs. And it helps that the Chiefs, who knows what's going on with them, but at the same time, doesn't that piss you off? Because I was thinking about this earlier. Like, of course, the one year where the Chiefs just like collapse, the Browns are kind of have their own questions and dealing with their own injuries and have caught in some bad luck this year. So yeah, it's tough. It's been a tough year, Henry, but I think that at the end of the day, everything is still in front of this team.
I feel the same way. I had them at 11-6 and I was kind of floating between 10-7 and 11-6. And I think I'd revise simply to 10-7. I still think that the Browns team has a lot of winnable games on their schedule. I still think that although yes, the division has gotten tougher, I still think the Browns match up well with these teams. I think they're, you know, the Steelers are not going to be able to threaten them with a downfield passing game, which is the weakness of this defense. And I know everybody's riding the Bengals train high today, and maybe I'll be looking stupid for saying this, but I'm still not 100% convinced on the Bengals just because of the offensive line. I understand that they've looked great, but they've played some teams that I think haven't pressured them in the same way that the Browns defensive line is going to pressure Joe Burrow. So we'll see. Those guys have played better than I thought they would. Clearly the Bengals overall are a much better team than I thought they were going to be with, you know, the additions on the outside with Jamar Chase, with how good the defense is. But I'm not ready to say that the Browns, you know, are really, you know, maybe they lose a game or two against the Bengals, but I don't think, you know, that team is head and shoulders above the Browns still. So I'm going to say 10-7. I'm going to say, yes, they still make the playoffs. I think they will be the 6th or the 7th seed, but I do think they're in an all right position still, even with everything that's happened. I think Baker will get healthier. I think he will play better. And I think, frankly, the other thing that's making me optimistic about the Browns is the Browns are built a little bit for November and December football, as they should be. Being a team in Cleveland, they run the ball well and they get after the quarterback. So their weaknesses, you know, downfield passing and safety, you know, the safety / back secondary play, those tend to, you know, not be as important as the season goes along, especially in the AFC North. So I will hang my hat on that will be the case for the Browns this year as well.
Yeah, it's still exactly what I was going to say. They still are built for this exact run that they can go on. We saw it last year, right, when a lot of the same questions were, is Baker Mayfield a guy that can lead the Browns to playoffs win, this, that, and the other? The defense was a huge question last year. And the day they beat the Steelers, why? Because you can run the ball down their throat, and you do the same against the Steelers or the Chiefs. You have some success running the ball as well. So, again, this team's still very much built for a playoff run. And, again, it's still out in front of them, Henry. But, like I said, I think these next couple of weeks – are going to be the crucial weeks. And if you drop some of these games, the outlook on the season is going to be a lot different than if you win them. So crucial stretch coming up here. And thank God they had 10 days to get ready for it.
Yes, they did. They had 10 days to get ready for the Steelers in particular. So that will be the big one on Halloween. Jordan, you and I will preview that game. That episode will be out on Friday, coming out with another episode with a guest as well this week. So plenty of more content, Browns fans, but wanted to get in this little, you know, mini buy reset for you and talk about some of the Baker Mayfield news as well. So Browns fans, Until next time, two words for you. Go Browns.